given that there could be potentially conflicting statistics that are reported out, there needs to be a narrative that goes along with it, yes.
Yeah, yes, and I would just to clarify the recommendation, first of all, I would alter the second sentence in the sub-bullet. So let's go back. But they should both be, one says calculated, the other says reporting. They should, I think the recommendation is they should both be calculated. They should both be calculated, both relative and adverse and favorable, sorry, relative and absolute and favorable and adverse should both be calculated. And then I think the idea would be see if they give a consistent measure. And it should also be clear from that little graph I showed that at a single point in time, it doesn't make that much difference in terms of relative and absolute. It's over time that you could come up with different conclusions. The Trivedi article was a classic case, and Ken Keppel and I ended up writing a letter to the editor at New England Journal of Medicine because, you know, we found very different conclusions by using a different set of measures. The favorable and adverse issue, you can get that has two issues involved. One is you can get a different answer over time, but the other is that the reporting to the media, the public perception, can be very different. And that's a similar it's a similar but different issue. And again, you know, you may want to calculate both and see what kind of message you're trying to send. And if it's very consistent, then pick one, because the simplicity of the report is pretty important. But these are complicated issues, unfortunately.
Yes.
So, but you're not recommending to report absolute, both the absolute and relative statistics. So there's not really a direction which one to report. You're saying calculate both, but you're not recommending to report both.
See page 30. The recommendation that they put in the report is close to the question. The recommendation was both absolute and relative should be calculated, and if they leave conflicting conclusions, both should be presented, allowing the reader to make their own interpretation. Okay. So I think I agree with that.
Assuming that there's some kind of narrative.
As an explanation of why they're different. Yeah. So is that what you want to say?
That's part of the discussion. I guess the question to me that comes up is if one of them shows an adverse effect, then more of an adverse effect. So you, let's say the case where you've got both lines going down, but the rate for whites is much stronger than the whites rates for other populations. Might someone say, hey, you know, we're all doing well here, versus somebody else saying, hey, the race is continuing, but somebody's falling further behind, even though, you know, we're looking to improve to this level. What's the level we're trying to get to? This rate is much slower among this population. The rate's much slower among this population.
I agree absolutely, Dennis. And if you can, I mean, even just two lines, you know, on a graph, and they could be, you know, very low, very high. They could go in different directions. They could go at different rates. It's amazing how much just two lines can vary so much. And so that's where, you know, I don't think there's a right answer. And I think there's a context and a certain value. And I think the other example I gave was the Werner article that had a very inflammatory title about heart disease among blacks and whites in New York State, saying that it got much worse. And in fact, the African American rate had been at a fairly small level and tripled compared to, you know, an improvement compared to only a doubling improvement in the whites. But the disparity, how as they measured it, widened, and so they said things got worse. I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that's for people to decide, and it is somewhat of a value judgment. I just think if you come up with different conclusions over time as to whether things are getting better or worse, you probably ought to let, I think reasonable people will disagree.
I had a couple of questions and an intense concern. So one question had to do with, are we going to have any comment, or is anyone aware of anything that there's any consensus around as to what's the threshold percentage for something to actually be called a disparity? We wrestled with that at Cigna when we were trying to decide what we were going to go after. We never found anything, so we had to do our kind of best judgment and move forward. So that was one question I had. And then I'm very concerned when we start talking about leaving the reader to make their own interpretation. This is really complicated. Look how long it took us to be able to even tell you what we thought was going to be a simple task. And then when I watch the news and I can watch two different channels, and it's like, are they reporting on the same story? So that makes me, I don't know what the answer is, but that makes me very, very concerned when you're talking about something this important and this emotionally charged. And I guess I'm certainly not a statistician, and I understand the whole point of, if you look at it this way, it looks good. If it looks it looks bad. But what's real? Is there really, what is real? Is it better or is it not better? And if there's a question, I vote for us to go with the worst case scenario conclusion, rather than people deciding to selectively interpret it that things are fabulous, when the people, the patient at the end of the story is not any better off.
Yeah, I think that's what the point I was trying to get at also with you, Joel, is that there's disparities in context. You can bring up, if the trend is down for everybody, that's fair game to cite that. But if the gap is widening as the trend is down, then there's something else that needs to be considered there. And that's, I think, that measurement, it should be the focus of the discussion, rather than what could be interpreted by other people locally to say, yeah, everybody's doing better, so, is the problem solved, or it's being solved. And maybe it is, but I think it needs another layer. I think what you want to do is stimulate discussion around it to consider, well, what's going on. Maybe it is okay, but it seems to me it's a flag of some sort. It may not be a red flag, but it's a flag of some sort.
And the dollars follow. That's the thing.
I think we're going to Ernie, and then Luther, and then Marshall, and then Ramah. And then Don. And then William. Okay, so you got that order, Ernie? Just zigzag. I think, Ernie, you were next, and then Luther, and Ramana, and then...
Okay. A common corollary to this one, because I agree that reasonable people can choose disagree based upon these findings, is to show the actual rates themselves. As opposed to just showing the difference or the relative rate, and then people can look at those rates themselves and have a little bit more information from which to make a decision. So I put it as a corollary to not only just show differences or relative rates, but also to show the actual rates.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm next. I had one the same concern, because there is a question. I think it may... It makes an assumption about the sophistication and the motives of the interpreter. And I think that may not always be in the best interest of what we're trying to do. So it might be that one way to approach this is to give some guidance as to when relative risk and absolute risk should be used. Because if it's just left to the discretion of the interpreter, then that would concern me, and I think would create some potentially problematic situations.
I'm wondering if it may be possible to be even more prescriptive. I mean, you leave a little wiggle room, for example, the issue of relative and absolute, as opposed to say, well, for example, present both. But I think one thing that may be worthwhile for staff to look at is the recent IOM report to ARC regarding their quality and disparities reports. There was one chapter that was contracted out to a communications firm where they came up with, you know, very explicit guidelines on, you know, basic stuff which was really important. So things like the titles on slides, you know, how you label x-axis, y-axis, how you label the different lines in a graph, but sort of a standardization approach. And it seems like these five different things are all sort of that ilk where I think you've identified some really key issues. But I wonder, I mean, I think a lot of comments have just been raised. There may be, like, too much leeway you're giving in terms of, like, the judgment, for example, with relative and absolute risk seems to be a clear one where it can really be misused. And so, you know, unless there's reasons otherwise, I would think that presenting both might be, you know, the way to go. But I wonder if maybe it's possible to have, like, you know, a document that essentially codifies some of these recommendations and makes them fairly explicit.
I would echo that, what Marshall just said. And I think also, I mean, there's this, the thing that's striking to me here is that, you know, the goal here is to improve quality and reduce disparities. And we know that if we only focus at times on generic quality improvement, we do see that the gaps remain because of the differences in the relative rates of improvement. So I do think that, just to support what Marshall has said, that it's important that we show both. I think it's important to show that there may be improvements, but those improvements may not be addressing the disparity, which is our argument for addressing the disparity in quality improvement. Because without having both sources of data, we'll miss, you know, one or the other side of that picture. But I think just ultimately it's this notion of we have to be able to target the disparity, and where we see that is when we see, you know, if we're doing two groups, we see both groups improving, but we still see the gap remaining or getting worse. So I think it's an argument for providing the data that shows that you have to target the disparity to address the disparity.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but I just want to note that, you know, you used words like gap, disparity, improvement, and each one of those, when you operationalize them in terms of the actual rates, could mean different things to different people. And I think that's, you know, where the I wouldn't even call them statistical. I mean, they're like math issues, right? I mean, that's where this, you know, when you're trying to look at differences in differences or differences in ratios over time, and the numbers just behave funny, and it depends on if they're a big number or a small number. I mean, Dennis was talking about, you know, a general improvement over time, but the gap gets bigger. Well, maybe the gap gets bigger, but maybe the ratio gets smaller. You know, and then what does that mean? Do we say that the disparity has improved or got worse? And I think that the danger is when this does move towards high stakes issues like reporting, that, you know, the tendency is we want, you know, I talk about this report card that I worked on from Massachusetts. We want to give a thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, that's what we really want. Sometimes it may be that you don't want either of those things when the math goes in different directions. If you're not willing to sort of give the actual rates, like Ernie said, I think that's great. You can give that information, but I just don't think the public would be able to, you know, do anything with it.
If you want the QRDR approach to this, is if the two absolute and relative disagree, we say no change.
I mean, just to reiterate, I agree that I think that rates should be given, because if the choice is left to the person reporting it out, they may report absolute statistics one year or relative a different year. And so then it's difficult to track over time and do those calculations. So I would report both the rates as well as both quality and disparity. Well, if you give the rates, you can calculate your own quality and disparity.
Marshall? Sean?
I guess there's some applications where a single number is needed. I mean, and what do you do in those situations? You're right. I mean, I don't know if there are any interventions out there that are incentivizing hostile level improvements in disparities. that if there's a pay-for-performance context, you need a single number to rank the provider and decide who to reward and who not to reward. So in some cases, you can't avoid this issue. And what would you do in that situation?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Well, no.
I didn't know if you wanted an answer
Well, because at some point, I think someone's going to be asked to vote on this issue. Do we agree with it or not? And I guess I think the answer depends on a context, and that recommendation can't work out in all scenarios, because there are scenarios where you need one number, I think there are scenarios where you need one number, not two. So maybe I guess I'm suggesting that it needs some type of qualification. And then on a related question, typically the NQF measures have specifications, and usually it's a single number, and you're specifying a numerator and denominator. There are a lot of different reporting issues, and sometimes NQF doesn't really address some of the reporting aspects, but sometimes they do make recommendations about, well, present the number with a confidence interval to account for imprecision and other aspects of how it gets reported. I'm trying to get my head around what will the specifications look like for the types of measures that we're talking about. Are we talking about a set of, if we have a domain that has five populations, we're talking about five numerators and five denominators? Are we talking about a specification that actually includes you take this proportion for this group and you divide it by this proportion and get the ratio? And would that actually that level of detail be incorporated into the specifications that some TAP and steering committee and eventually others will either vote up or down on? I don't know what everyone else has in mind for that level of detail or not.
I don't know if we're ready to get to that level of detail. Joel, and I'll let you comment. You're the author of the, you know, I don't know that we're at that point. My sense is that depending on what measure you chose, you know, you almost got different results. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we were trying to get to that level of
right,
detail.
Right.
I guess we leave it up to you all to figure that out. I think there certainly are times when you want to get to one number, especially if you're going to use it as an incentive program. And you could conceivably build in a lot of this complexity into that. I mean, I think, you know, Ernie's idea, recommendation that, you know, if the absolute and relative, and this would be in an improvement score, right? If you think about a pay-for-performance program that not only looks at benchmarks and thresholds, but improvement over time, this is where it would come into play. And then you would, the question is, would you look at the change in the gap or the change in the ratio? And if they conflict, you might just say, you know, no change. That's one possibility. You know, same idea of making reports over time, state report card, a national report card that Ernie does. And again, if the things conflict over time, you might just say, you know, indeterminate.
I think the issue is when we get to if they're performance incentives, or if one is going to get a differential in terms of per member per month or something based on certain outcomes, then the clarity in terms of the measure is going to be imperative. But I don't know that we can determine that now. But I do agree with you that there needs to be clarity.
Ernest, did you have a comment?
Oh, did you have one?
Okay. Any conclusions?
This is on. If possible, can I get into the queue?
Absolutely,
yeah,
Dawn, you're on.
And the desire to have the actual rate displayed and trending over time, such that regardless of what statistic is used, one could make it their own calculation for the alternative if possible. And that also resolved the issue, I think, where we kind of got into a discussion around implementation and what one would use for a sort of a payment incentive program. You know, it's best when you're giving a payment incentive program that you're fairly transparent in that calculation. And so providing the rate is the only real way for to get to true transparency in how you calculate those rates and what the unintended rationale might be for using one over the other.
Thank you. So at least part of the discussion is around use of the absolute versus relative, but is there a sense of both? Is there a sense of weighting one way or the other? Could you put a vote to, is there general agreement on trend, using trend information where possible, and also while all information's appropriate, to use whether there should be a weight toward that showing the kind of optimal disparity or more direct specific significant disparity of should one continue to exist as featuring it, not necessarily coming to a conclusion about it, but featuring it, making sure that becomes a point of focus rather than being able to be the information being able to be diluted in some way, shape, or form, and being picked off.
No, I would go on record as saying that I think the trend comment most accurately captures, I think, where we want to go. I don't know that we have the level of granularity to say that one method is better than the other. I think whatever method is chosen, you have to stick with it, so then you can determine if over time you're making an impact. And that's, you know, purely from sort of a quality improvement perspective.
Great. Silence of assent. Everybody agrees. Okay.
I think it's the options being in at this. We do have this. We should refer to the human segment.
Then I'll offer, which do you prefer? Do you prefer using trend information and then highlighting should there be a disparities, a significant disparities issue that's still present, that be featured in the context of additional information rather than just laying out other, that's option one. Option two is just, as Joel had originally suggested, you provide the information that there's a conflict or there's something that varies, that you just let it be interpreted by the audiences that are using the information.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an either or, is it? I mean, I'm sorry, that's not an either or, is it? I mean, you can say that trend data should be shown, absolute differences should be shown, and relative differences should be shown.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they can be blended, but it depends on what, I guess, the guidance and interpretation of the information comes in play, because I think it still opens the possibility of somebody saying, well, things look better, but at least you can't force it, but at least you can say, you know, these are some of the points to consider. You know, just because the trend line's down doesn't necessarily mean that disparities are
Dennis, normal. Can I suggest that everybody just look at page 30 while they're thinking about this? And in a sense, that has, you know, that's got the individual rates for each of the populations. It shows the change over time, and it displays how, you know, you get better or worse. Well, so that's, I mean, that really gets trends, it gets rates, and it gets the disparity over time, the change in disparity, depending on how you define that. And so everybody burns that into their head.
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about. And
yeah.
I wish I had a better recommendation, but you know, this is just one example, you know, based on numbers and sort of the mid-range percentages.
Uh-huh. Okay, Grace, and then Ellen, and then Marcia.
So just based on the experiences at my company, as well as those of other health funds at the National Health Fund Collaborative, those of us that do track health disparity metrics do track both absolute as well as relative, and we do look for trends. And then the other thing is that we also look for favorable, you know, as well as negative comparison, because, you know, the favorable minority outcomes mean that there are disparities among Caucasians. So the best practice right now is to just set the best performing benchmark and then measure up to that. So I think that these are very solid recommendations.
Turning to page 30, I looked at my notes here. Are we talking at all or noting a statistical significance? Because there can be a difference, but it's not significant, right? So
yeah. Well, I would ask Sean to weigh in on that. And I, you know, that's my one comment about statistical significance. Is that, I guess I have two comments. One is that it's very dependent on sample size. So in Aetna or WellPoint, everything is statistically significant, I would guess. But, you know, pretty close. And so I think you have to be careful with statistical significance. And the other thing is that some of these disparities indexes, which we haven't even gotten to yet, don't have well-defined statistical properties, and so it becomes quite complicated to even calculate a confidence interval which would give you statistical significance. Again, unfortunately, I don't have a strong recommendation. You know, a lot of this gets into judgment, discussion, context, and that kind of thing.
So yes, a follow-up to that. So if I may comment again, based on our experience, we do track statistical significance when we indicate those points by little, you know, up and down arrows. But, you know, we also do look at in terms of general size of the population. So you might have an area with huge statistical significance, but very, very few people, or another area with maybe only 1 or 2% absolute, but a very distinct, very statistically solid difference, and it has a very large population, like the county of Los Angeles. It makes more sense to then focus resources to try to move the bigger population. So I think you're really... You measure, but then you have to be smart about the data, too. And sometimes you won't know what conclusions to draw until you actually sit there and massage it a little bit and reflect on it.
There are other measures like the mean or the standard errors or the differences as a proportion of the standard errors. I'm forgetting what they are, but there are some other measures you can look at, too.
Say a clinically significant difference. I mean, a 20% difference in muscle strength may not clinically be significant in gait, for example. So rather than say statistically significant, I'd rather say a clinically significant, and that number may be very different from a statistically different scenario.
I think the order is Ellen, and then Edward, and then Luther, and then Moyer. Well, William, you want to go first? Go ahead.
So I just have a fundamental question about this whole discussion. In terms of, I thought the purpose of our body was to create measures as opposed to tell people who collect data how to present it. Maybe I'm wrong about that, and you can correct me if that's the case. But if we do what suggested here, determining how we should present it, there's a very famous statistics thing that's called Anscombe's Quartet, and it's presenting data in a graphical fashion that has exactly the same mean, exactly the same standard deviation, and if you look at the plots that come from that, they're entirely different. And so I think we have to be very cautious about the interpretation of data and how people will use it in order to make a point, whatever point they're trying to make. So is it, in fact, our goal to tell the end users of our metrics what they should do in terms of reporting their data? That's the question.
I think we have to, don't we? I mean, the devil's in the details here.
Thank you. Yeah. Would you like to add? It's a question of guidance for application. You know, is it NQF's intention to provide not only like in this case, measures, but also guidance on the application of the measures, the interpretation of the measures?
Not very much, other than clearly what the directionality is of a given measure as being good or bad. Some measures have thresholds, some measures don't. So, not particularly. So maybe I'm missing the nuance here, having just walked in. Sorry.
If I understood your question correctly, you basically want to know what are we going to do with all this? It's the so what question.
That's it. Okay. I mean, the fact is we can talk about how to present the data, but once I own the data, it's my data. And I can present it any way that I want to without having to be necessarily responsible for saying whether it's absolute or relative. It all depends on what trend I'd like to show. Is that not what happened when I own the data?
That would be true for your data to do whatever you choose to in terms of quality improvement. But if there's a standardized measure that's been selected for use for public reporting or performance, no, you would actually need to follow the standards. That's actually part of the reason for NQF is to try to standardize the measures across different groups, entities, whatever they get to be.
Well, standardizing the measures is one thing, but standardizing the way the data is actually reported is potentially another thing. And so I think this is, gets into that secondary aspect of it, and that's what I was questioning as to whether that's our role. This is my first NQF panel, so I have no idea what you typically do, but it strikes me as it's going to be hard to control.
In general, the display of the measure results is outside of our purview. But I do think a lot of the same principles apply that come through the measure is oftentimes what comes to the display of the measure.
Yeah, when I first saw this that graph this morning, it really bothered me because I wasn't sure what I would do about it. And so I've been thinking about it a lot. And then I've listened to a lot of discussion here. And my personal conclusion is to accept your proposal that you... show the trends, show the relative differences, and show the absolute differences. And the reason I feel that way are two things primarily. The first is that it's the most ambiguous. And on the surface, that seems like a bad idea. I think the most ambiguous here is the thing that stimulates debate the most, and out of debate is going to come first tension, which is good for this, and the second is it's going to come, we're going to get closer to the truth if it gets debated. The second thing is that this is the most transparent way to do things, and I think that transparency is becoming a really important value, and that if people feel like they're not getting the full story, we all lose something. So, you know, it's tough, but I think you guys are right.
I would say a couple of things. One is, when you have a graph like this, at least visually, unless the curves are superimposed, the disparity continues to exist. And I guess the question really goes back to the issue that Colette raised earlier, and that is, you know, what is a clinically meaningful difference? And it might be helpful if we could provide either some guidance on that or the fact that that should be addressed, because I think that's where we're caught. There's statistical significance, and then there's the issue of what might be clinically significant or important. And I'm just, if there's some way to provide guidance for the provider or individual is going to have this data as to what to do with it, rather than just leaving it to their discretion, it might be helpful. If there's not, then maybe there's something we could say to them that would be helpful and that they need help interpreting it.
Can I just comment? So I think we have to consider there are two issues going on here. One is looking at trends over time and seeing if things are getting better or worse. That's one issue. That's what this graph speaks to. The other, which I think is important, is when is a disparity, when is a difference not meaningful? Mm-hmm. And that's another discussion which we didn't really address in here. And I think even as Norman said, you know, what is clinically significant? Well, if we had 10 Normans in here, I'll bet we would have 10 different answers. And it's not always easy to determine what's clinically significant. You often have to, and it depends on, are you talking about a process measure, you know, so if, or are you talking about some sort of a difference in function, And in that difference in function, does it make a difference? It makes a difference whether that patient is an athlete or whether it sits in front of a desk, whether that patient is going to miss work. So what's clinically significant has different meanings to different people. But that's not to say it's not worthwhile. And, you know, you get a bunch of clinicians in the room. That's what they want to know. So I think that's an important discussion to have. So I guess I'm making two points. One is that don't conflate the issues. This is trend over time versus what's meaningfully different. And they're both impossible questions to answer clearly.
I just respond briefly. So, but I think that makes my point. I mean, if the experts can't make these decisions, why would we expect the reader or the interpreter to be able to make an appropriate decision as to what to do with the data?
Oh, so in other words, you're saying, I think one is, I think at some point there has to be a judgment on whether or not, and it is a judgment, let's say take a single point in time on whether or not a disparity is meaningful or not. And that is, I think that does, and I think you do need experts to weigh in as to whether or not it's important or not clinically. What does the evidence show? Where's the rate now? Is the rate starting at a high level, low level, and so on? So that's at one point in time you make that decision. And then over time, you're seeing if things got better or worse. But then I think you would also, at that, you know, at the end point, you might say, is there still a clinically significant difference, or is there still a meaningful difference? And again, you'd have to have that same discussion over time with all kinds of new clinical evidence that might come into play and so on. So I think that you won't always have an RCT, a randomized controlled trial, to tell you when a difference is meaningful or not. But I think that you'll have to rely on expert opinion, and that you're going to have to make that, and that people will have to make that distinction in the same way that we make the distinction, just forget disparities, just about any kind of, what's the optimal level of quality to make. I think that it's all dependent on some research and some clinical opinion.
Marshall.
So I agree with Ed in terms of a very explicit recommendation that, you know, in general, we recommend presenting trends, absolute and relative data, and then an example graph like this, or slight modifications. And it's very clear in terms of explaining, well, this is what we have in mind. Or, you know, if people want to, step one, step back, say at a minimum, these data are available. So, for example, if someone wants to do consumer report cards and have a simple display, fine. But, you know, this more detailed data needs to be available also. But this way, I think that if you don't have this type of explicit description, this is the danger of what Bill said, that people just interpret it, you know, in the way they want to do it, or present data in a way that is, you know, maybe nefarious. You know, Bill's right that, well, technically maybe our charge ends at a certain point, but in practice, this is probably at least as important in terms of the actual impact, so that if we have the chance, we should go ahead and, you know, make the recommendation.
Cards up, near the cards. Down.
Luther?
Card down, Elizabeth up.
Sorry, I have a very quick question, which is, are we going to make these blanket recommendations, or are there going to be different recommendations by, as you said, Helen, they're somewhat different depending on the measure? I think that should be whatever the group feels comfortable doing. I'm just wondering if it might be measure specific how we want to actually make recommendations, just to give more work.
AQF does also produce for the measure developer some guidance on measure construction, and so if there's some elements of this that I think are important, we would bring that to our Consensus Trends Approval Committee to see if they want to weave that into the measure construction guidance.
Okay.
In which case it would be something that would be people would consider each time they're developing a measure.
Okay.
So do we have a motion of sorts on floor for approval around presenting trend information where possible and providing an example of that information visually, much like it's presented in the report, and that there be some narrative related to mitigate that kind of path of least resistance, what I want to hear, you know, some kind of narrative that describes the information presented in a way that describes any trends, disparities, or other findings of note related to race, ethnicity, and disparities. Some kind of narrative that would accompany the information, rather than simply saying, "Okay, here's the chart. Good luck. God bless," and we're out of here. Is that some kind of, is that, I mean, it's some clumsy way, does that kind of capture kind of the 3 points?
I agree. I think this is almost like an ethics caveat in the instructions. It's really a moral ethical issue that we really need to come to terms with, and I think it makes sense. We've done this in the past, and this is a perfect time to do it here.
And the only thing that I would add is Ernie's idea as part of the explanation that if you have the results going in opposite directions, you need to really think long and hard about what your next step's going to be. That's the big red flag going off.
We'll ask Andrew to quote those words. Thinking long and hard. Do you have sufficient direction on this? Or do you?
Yeah, I think we could review the transcript and come up with something that we would float by you again. And obviously, MGH is free to, is free to alter their manuscript as they wish, but I think we have the sense of where the group would like ANQF's position to be.
But sure, I think, though, the message, though, is that the lack of clarity is because it is unclear. I understand that you would have to review the transcript. I'm not sure you're going to find the wisdom or the specificity that you're looking for. I'm just saying the consensus of the group, as I hear it, is not clear.
But we would be able to convey in a concise manner.
So I would swear it? Yes. Feel free.
People find it very helpful.
Okay, we are on to bullet 3, pair comparisons versus summary statistics. Should a pairwise comparison using historically benched group as the reference point be checked to see if a positive finding from the summary statistic reflects superior care received by the disadvantaged group?
I'll give an example of this one and then I'll make a comment also. The BGV between groups variance summary statistic, which is the difference between variance among many groups. So this is the rationale for using a summary statistic is when you have many groups and you're trying to come up with a single number that summarizes whether there are disparities among that group. And it turns out, a concrete example is in Massachusetts when we looked at this among hospitals. When we looked within a hospital, certain hospitals, the minority patients actually had better quality of care than the historically advantaged, meaning white non-Hispanic population. And as a result, that BGV statistic showed a disparity, and in an incentive program, they were not eligible for the incentive payment. So, to me, that's a little bit problematic. And we pointed that out in a recent article that we mentioned here. So that's the specific recommendation that we're referring to when you have a summary statistic that summarizes the experience of many groups. It lacks directionality, and you ought to do some pairwise comparisons. I can also tell you that I'm not a statistician. Maybe Sean is more familiar. There are about 10 or 12 of these different summary statistics. They get very complicated. I had a presentation at Academy Health where Sam Harper was talking about using chaos theory to describe these things. It gets very very ornate, very intricate, very quickly. The biggest problem with some of these summary statistics is that they're not very transparent and you don't really know what's going on. So use with care, but again, I wish I had a better recommendation, because if you've got 3, 4, 5, 10 groups that you want to track over time, that can be pretty tricky. This simple graph that I show can get pretty crazy. I don't know. Ernie, does HRQ use a summary statistic?
No, we don't, but Sam Harper was funded by the federal government, and we've encountered a lot of issues with it. We get this push to do it, but on the other hand, there's a lot of issues dependent on weighting or non-weighting, and so if you don't weight it, right, so each group is weighted, is treated the same, then you get very, very small groups having as much weight or importance as very, very large groups. And it's then a function of how many groups you pick. So the more groups you pick, the more possibilities for having some kind of, influence on the summary statistic. On the other hand, if you weighted by population size, then disparities of small groups don't make any difference at all because they're so small. So you get one of those possible side effects.
So Ernie would probably give a much better representation of what some of the issues are, and I think that's a different and very important issue, the weighting issue.
Joe, in your example, did you or anybody else go into that hospital and look at paired comparisons?
Yes.
To see what happened when?
Yeah, that's when we found that the African Americans were receiving better quality care than the whites. So the summary statistics showed that there was a disparity. But then we had white, non-Hispanic, black, Hispanic, and I think Asian. And we looked at the individual hospitals, and some of those hospitals, the minority populations were receiving better quality of care.
Joe, may I ask what measures you were looking at?
Those were the HQA, the Hospital Quality Alliance, core measures.
I don't know if I completely understand this. As far as I understand of this, it seems like there are a lot of cons to using summary statistics, and the only reason to use it is because you're aggregating small populations to make some conclusions?
I would say there are close. The overriding reason to use a summary statistic is simplicity. Because if you can imagine making all these pairwise comparisons, one against the other, and then over time in many years, just imagine in your head, it gets pretty complicated pretty quickly. And if you want, like Sean said, if you want to come up with a single number, this is sort of a nice way to come up with a single number. But there's the directionality issue, and then there's another one that we didn't actually address in the recommendation, which is the weighting issue, which is already described. I'll just summarize again just very quickly. So you have maybe 4 or 5 different groups, and one summary statistic just says compare each group to the best measure or to the reference group and take the average of those differences. Well, that means that even like the small group, people from Togo count just as much as the white non-Hispanics if you do it that way. Or you can weight by the size of the population. There are those sorts of issues that come into play as well. So they have a lot of drawbacks. But I'll tell you, when an insurance company or health plan wants to present their data on many different measures, it gets very complicated very quickly, and so it's a real tension.
But just to be clear, your recommendation is to not use summary statistics and use the pair comparison.
We weren't that explicit. we said you may want to use a summary statistic, but if you do, you better check to see what, you better do two things. One is check to make sure what the direction of the disparities are, and if you believe that that the historically advantaged population should be the reference group and they're the ones that are receiving worse quality care, then you, you know, then you have to think about that before you report that a disparity exists. And secondly, you have to be explicit about the values, which is coming up, on whether you think you should be weighting the different population groups. And you thought the absolute relative issue is easy.
Well, but, no, but it, it sounds like, just for the sake of speeding the conversation along, it feels like generally we should use compared comparisons and when you are using summary statistics, it should be in very specific cases with many guidelines.
You know, one difference between reporting the paired comparisons compared to reporting a summary measure is the paired comparisons are something that you can interpret, a ratio, a risk ratio, or a difference. You know what that means. There's probably no summary measure that you're going to come up with out there that the average person will know what to do with. So you, the end result is a number. And therefore, I think they're only useful if you're talking about summary measures, you're really talking about comparing this number that's calculated on this unit, maybe it's a population or a geographic area, and comparing it to another unit. That's and maybe the reason for doing it is data reduction. There's just too many comparisons and it's cluttery. It's too much for anyone to process. You condense it into a single number. So that process of condensing is filled with information loss, subjective decisions, or just really arbitrary decisions. So there's no single right way to do it. And I certainly don't have any favorite summary measurement. So I certainly agree with everything Gil has said, and I think that NQF, I believe, has a position paper and other framework for evaluating composite measures. And I think you can kind of think of these summary measures as a type of composite measure, and you use a lot of what was in that prior work for this. And I think that one of the recommendations from the composite measure activity was, if you're reporting composite measures, also separately report the individual components that went into the composite measure, and that seems like exactly what's being recommended here.
It seems to me also there are a couple of issues. It's not just one issue. I mean, there. Take your example, Joel, of that hospital. I mean, looking at the overall disparities, but there are different ways. There are black-white disparities. There are Hispanic. I mean, there are populations of sufficient N in many places that you can do these kind of comparisons against the advantage group on a chart. But for others, the smaller groups, then you run into small N's and you run into variation. So and then you've got, you know, there are layers of complexity here in terms of how you approach the use of summary statistics versus the disaggregation to a point where you could then, where there's benefit, there's potential benefit of looking at within group or between group comparisons. So, I think one of the charges for us is to consider when you're going to use the summary versus when to use pair, and that there's no clear. Again, there may not be clarity on when to apply them. It depends on, you may want to apply them all, you know, to the extent you can within large groups. And then when you get to smaller groups, they may have to go into summary statistics of some sort. Or you refer to the methods that you talked about before, where you aggregate, roll up. Ellen? No.
You had a question about how often these sorts of summary statistics are used by NQF. Is it a common thing? I mean, maybe this isn't used that often. It's kind of a moot point.
back to Sean's point, we actually do increasingly have had a lot of composite measures, but I don't know about, I mean, to me that's really more where the direction has been rather than a summary statistic per se.
So I wonder if, given the concerns people have about it and it's not normally used, whether it's something we need to continue to discuss.
Although what may happen is that if we end up coming with a long list of disparate measures, then it may become more of an issue in terms of simplicity. Colette?
You know, one comment though, the one thing I would argue from a clinician's perspective is the more complex we make this, I feel the less likely that people are going to use it in a very tangible way. So although all of this is some of it is almost an academic exercise, I want to make sure we keep it relevant to the end user. And the end users, they're not going to be statisticians or bio, you know, that's just not going to be the case.
So. Motion for lack of clarity.
I didn't hear.
I didn't hear. There's no.
I hear a silver bullet, so let's take a break.
Okay, 10-minute break. Yeah, no, I